On today's Biz News Briefing, US bill targeting ANC cadres clears first hurdle. Analysts and Inkabani respond to her sacking. Trump name calls Powell and asks a $1 trillion question. Nigeria's economy gets a paper upgrade. And Joburg residents fight for the city's green soul. Stay tuned. It's Wednesday, the 23rd of July. This is your Biz News Briefing. I'm Stuart Lohman. The US-SA sanctions bill has advanced out of the committee in the US House of Representatives and could have serious consequences for ANC officials. Colonel Chris Wyatt.
As House of Representatives Bill 2633, the US-South Africa Bilateral Relations Review Act of 2025 has made it successfully through committee in the House. Now, this is a major milestone and should send alarm bells ringing in Cape Town and Pretoria. But will it? Now, this bill was introduced some time ago, actually not that long ago, considering the congressional calendar. But when it was introduced, I said, I'm not sure if it's going to get advanced on the floor because the US has many other issues on its plate. On April 3rd, 14 months after a similar bill was introduced in the previous Congress, Congressman Ronnie Jackson of Texas 13th Congressional District introduced the U.S.-South Africa Bilateral Relations Review Act of 2025, which would mandate a full review of bilateral relationship between the U.S. and South Africa and help advance President Trump's foreign policy agenda by giving him the tools necessary to impose sanctions on corrupt South African government officials who choose to support America's adversaries like China, Russia, and Iran. His co-sponsor on this was Representative John James of Michigan's 10th District. The bill states that South Africa has brazenly abandoned its relationship with the United States to align with China, Russia, Iran, and terrorist organizations, a betrayal that demands serious consequences, said Representative Ronnie Jackson. This legislation ensures we conduct a comprehensive review of this supposed ally while holding accountable any corrupt officials. The era of governments undermining American interests without repercussions ends now. Now, from my perspective, legislation like this is welcome. I have been pointing out the egregious offenses that South Africa has committed against the United States' national interest and our friends, partners, and allies for many years. It's the ANC's doing and their love affair with Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, Beijing, Havana, and Moscow. It included far more issues in their bill than the bipartisan bill that was introduced in the previous Congress in February of 2024. Chief among the concerns is a pattern of egregious conduct by the African National Congress, specifically anti-Semitic, anti-Israel-related statements and actions. Their detailed list included 14 allegations, including threats to arrest South Africans, appointing Ibrahim Rasool, and the ANC Gauteng's efforts to rename Sandton Drive after an Arab terrorist, a direct and intentional affront to the dignity of freedom-loving people the world over. South African government, ANC's close relations with the Russian Federation, chief among their complaints here, are the Lady R incident, where Pretoria ignored our polite diplomatic requests for information for over 5 months, and also conducting a naval exercise with the Russian Federation while it was illegally attacking Ukraine. South African government, ANC's close relations with Communist China, including the Chinese Communist Party's suppression of freedom of expression and individual rights, and also allowing the Test Flying Academy of South Africa to train former NATO and American fighter pilots to train Chinese People's Liberation Army pilots. ANC-led government's history of endangering the South African people. And here they highlight the ineptitude, the corruption, the malfeasance in ESCOM and Transnet, among others, as well as the Hammanskraal cholera outbreak and state capture. And finally, the appointment of a known Trump hater, rushing that known Trump hater, Ibrahim Rasool, to be credentialed by the Biden regime just days before Trump took office. A man who then spewed racist insults at President Trump and Americans as a sitting ambassador. What happens next? Well, it'll be placed on the calendar, which Republicans control. Mike Johnson's responsible for that. Then there'll be a floor debate and any amendments. The House will vote. The Republicans have the votes to pass this. Some Democrats will join them. A lot of Democrats are also hot foot at the ANC and its arrogance, especially the Black Congressional Caucus. It'll go to the Senate for consideration, assuming there are no changes or markups and they have identical versions. Then it goes to the president for signature after they vote on it. But if the Senate changes it, it has to go back to the House. They have to re-vote on it.
One wonders when the penny will drop. Now, President Ramaphosa's sacking of Education Minister Inkabani has apparently eased new tensions ahead of a crucial budget vote. Bloomberg reports.
Many analysts that we've been speaking to are saying that this is a sign that a coalition government is working in action. As you were mentioning, yes, this is the second government shakeup that we've seen in the past few weeks by President Ramaphosa. The significance here, though, is that what we were seeing from opposition parties within this coalition government is that they were threatening to hold up any sort of budgetary movements and approval of budgets moving forward if they, you know, in their words, if they don't see the removal of some parliamentary members who they deem as corrupt and compromised removed. And so, yes, that is what we saw earlier this week from President Ramaphosa. The education minister, Nobuhle Nakabane, she faced allegations of corruption and potentially accusations that she misled parliament. Now with her removal, we haven't really heard from the ANC or from President Ramaphosa why exactly she was removed, but we are hearing from opposition coalition members who are saying that they are pleased with this and now they can move forward with the next steps of approval, but saying at the same time in the same breath that they're not going to stop going after other officials who they deem within the ANC party as being, in their words, compromised. And as you were mentioning, yes, this opens the door to budgetary approval later today. We were waiting for the appropriations bill. Really, it's the final nail in the coffin of this budget impasse that we've been seeing over the past few months. Finally, going to get a vote later today, hopefully then easing tensions within the coalition government. Potentially then for investors, it's giving them a bit of relief that, yes, the coalition government is working and potentially there is more accountability that we are seeing within the government. The ANC, though, again, for their part, are saying that the removal of the education minister has nothing to do with the DA and some of the threats that they heard there. But you do have to wonder whether or not investor sentiment and really this holdup of this budget that we've been waiting for the past 5 months had anything to do with at least the removal of the education minister and moving things forward here.
Nkabani says she was ready to clear her name in parliament and insists she did nothing wrong. ENCA reports.
There is a perception that I lied in parliament. I was looking forward for this day so that I clear my name. I prepared nicely files, appointment letters, everything to prove myself that I did not lie in parliament. I am a professional. I am an academic. There is no way I can risk my reputation by lying in parliament. I wanted to go to parliament and clear my name today, having all the evidence that I did follow due processes to make sure that systems are in place. But when the dust has settled, I will then get an opportunity to clear my name. I'm looking forward as well to appear before the Ethics Committee because I did receive a correspondence from them and I've also submitted my representation to the Ethics Committee.
Michelle's a mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son and his mini sports bags.
When you traded in your car with We Buy Cars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, We Buy Cars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
U.S. President Donald Trump says Fed Chair Jerome Powell is keeping interest rates high for political reasons. Bloomberg reports.
Do you think that Fed Chair Jerome Powell should
resign? I think he's done a bad job, but he's going to be out pretty soon anyway. In eight months, he'll be out. But he's, I call him too late. He's too late all the time. He should have lowered interest rates many times. Europe lowered their rate 10 times. We lowered ours none. And it's causing a problem for people that want to buy a home. Look, our economy is so strong now, we're blowing through everything. We're setting records. You know that, you see that. And whether it's the Philippines or anyone else, we're setting records at levels that nobody's ever seen before. But you know what? people aren't able to buy a house because this guy is a numbskull. He keeps the rates too high and probably doing it for political reasons. The only time I remember him cutting rates, I mean, he cut the rates just before the election to try and help Kamala or whoever he was trying to help. He probably didn't know. And he's building a building. He's $2.7 billion. They have a $900 million overrun. What is that? And that was given by Biden. That was another Biden deal. And this guy's building this building that's severely overrun. And what does he need the building for? What does he need? He needs space for more people. So they did a big study the other day, and they called all of the great intellects and the great economists and all of the great everything. It was 71, and only two got it right, me and another gentleman that happens to be very smart. 69 people got it wrong, and the Fed got it wrong, more wrong than anybody. And, you know, he has these think tanks, and they build buildings for people that think. And it's really not thinking. It's a little bit of combination of thinking, but it's something you sort of have or you don't have. They don't. The job he's done is just terrible. He ought to raise interest rates. You know, we should be at 1%. We should be leading the world. Instead, we're paying 4%. And if you look at what that means, that's over $1 trillion in interest that we have to pay. That with the striking of a pen, we would be saving more than $1 trillion.
Numbskull, bad at his job, the name calling doesn't stop. Doesn't sound like a healthy work environment. Staying in the US, Republic Congressman Ralph Norman says the Epstein files will be released in time. Bloomberg reports.
Not trying to protect anybody. The files are going to come out. Resolution has been made. It hadn't been released, but it will be. And the 30-day timeline is in there. And if this had been a bill, the Democrats kept saying, well, this needs to be a bill, it would have to go through the Senate. You're talking about 2 or 3 months at best. And as far as the recess, we're, what, a day early, possibly 2 days early? We need to be in the district, and we need to hear from our constituency. And the Epstein files, the public needs wants release, and it will be. There's nothing that's going to be hid here.
Well, to build off of this, we mentioned that the House Oversight is looking to subpoena Maxwell. This is an effort being led by one of your fellow House Freedom Caucus members, Tim Burchett. I'm wondering, when you are hearing from constituents about the release of these files, what would you need to learn from her testimony? What questions do you still have in specific?
She needs to come clean on everything. Look, we're talking about something that transcends politics. When you have 13, 14, 15-year-old girls that were abused, this transcends politics, and it all ought to be out there so that it doesn't happen again. I mean, it's happening, but this is such a publicized case, particularly with the way he died. A lot of people questioned that. But I think it's all going to come out, maybe not as fast as people want it. But, you know, it takes time to get these files. It takes time to redact those innocent victims who don't want their names released. They're part of no legal action. And I met one in the hallway that were in tears that were trafficked years ago. And so, again, the public's going to get what they want, as they should. Transparency is the name of the game. It'll be out there.
There have been some allegations that the speaker is trying to protect the president of the United States himself, Congressman. Have you had any assurances that Donald Trump's name is not on any client list or anywhere else in the Epstein files?
Well, First of all, the speaker is not protecting the president. He's not protecting anybody else. Let the files speak for themselves. And again, it lay dormant under the Biden administration. But now, and rightfully so, the public has a right to know. Transparency will be made. And look, the American people will render judgment if they suspect that things aren't released in due time. But I think they will be. And I think let the evidence point to whatever it will, and that's how it ought to be, and I think that's how it will be.
Including the President of the United States himself.
The President's not holding up anything. President Trump is not delaying anything. He's not withholding information. He's released the Justice Department to release everything, and that's what will be out there. And Democrats want to make an issue of it, which is fine. It's politics, but I would just say this transcends politics.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Nigeria's economy just got a paper upgrade, jumping 30%. But it still trails South Africa and remains Africa's fourth largest economy. Our partners at the Financial Times.
Nigeria's economy has gotten an upgrade, at least on paper. A new statistical model shows its gross domestic product to be 30% bigger than earlier calculations. That's because the country's National Bureau of Statistics has updated how it evaluates GDP. Joseph Cotterill is the FT's emerging markets correspondent. He joins me now to talk through what this all means for Nigeria. Hi, Joseph.
Hi there.
So tell me about these new statistics. How did Nigeria change how it calculates GDP?
So firstly, they changed the base year. So previously, they used 2010 as the base year. This time, they've updated it to 2019. They have done this to take better account of the internet as a factor in Nigeria's economy in particular, because in 2010, the internet and digital services and social media and all those lovely things would not have been very large in Nigeria. But by 2019, and certainly by this year, 2025, they will be quite large.
Right. So there's the digital transformation, but 30% is a huge difference. What else do the new stats take into account?
So also things such as pensions, Nigerians are saving more, and the informal sector, so people who are not formally employed but are still trading and so on, but they are not necessarily registered or paying tax. The informal sector as a share of GDP is now estimated at about 42.5%. Agriculture in Nigeria has turned out to be the largest contributor to national output, which is interesting because we have the picture of Nigeria as a exporter of crude oil. So it's changed what we think of as the drivers of growth in Nigeria as well.
So Joseph, does this change Nigeria's approach to its economic and financial situation?
It does make the country's debts as a percentage of GDP look healthier. They've gone down to about 40% compared to about 50% or so before. Will the government be tempted to borrow lots of money because of that change? Maybe not, because it is still carrying out a lot of big, painful, structural economic reform. These reforms and interest rates in Nigeria are extremely high as a result. But if they do plan to sell bonds on the international markets anytime soon, this would probably help their case with investors and perhaps get things back on the straight and narrow with the IMF and with bondholders.
That's the FT's Joseph Cotterill. Thanks, Joseph.
Thank you very much.
From Nigeria to the city of Johannesburg, where residents are fighting plans to alienate beloved parks, accusing the city of asset stripping. BizNews journalist Kerry Lanahang.
Johannesburg residents are up in arms over what many see as a covert attempt by the city to commercialize some of its most iconic public parks and greenbelt areas. At the center of the outcry is the Johannesburg Property Company's proposal to alienate properties such as Marks Park and Emerentia, a term which in municipal parlance refers to the sale, transfer, or change of leasing arrangements. But for residents, the word feels far more personal. Alienation from the city's green lungs and from the democratic process meant to protect them. As reported by Daily Maverick, The City of Johannesburg's 25th to 26th June Council agenda included proposals for the possible alienation of several high-profile public properties managed by the JPC. These included Marks Park, the Kalani Country Club, Pirate Sports Club, and land adjacent to Emerentia Dam and Zoo Lake. The news triggered a strong public backlash, with nearly 9,000 people signing a petition demanding that the city scrap any such plans and guarantee the land remains in public hands. The heritage listed Marks Park, part of a land donation made in 1939 by Lew Haldenase, is at the heart of the storm. The land was gifted to the people of Johannesburg for their use and enjoyment, said Ankindrea, a descendant of the Haldenase. It's not up to the city to sell or lease it for private development. While the city insists that no final decisions have been made, residents and councillors are wary. JPC General Manager Sizeka Sabalala told Daily Maverick that there is no truth to the idea that the city intends to sell the parks. Instead, the JPC is reviewing outdated lease agreements, some of which charge absurdly low fees, like 49 rand per year for Marks Park or 2 rand for Kalani, and is requesting council approval to begin a public participation process. The broader financial context, as captured in Currency News, helps explain why Joburg is eyeing its parks and public land as potential revenue sources. A recent Operation Vulindlela report revealed that municipalities like Johannesburg have essentially become employment agencies, diverting funds from service delivery to inflated bureaucracies. Since 2010, revenue from property rates has surged by 91% and service charges by 101%, yet residents receive less for their money. Spending on salaries, meanwhile, has increased by 84%. Journalist Natasha Marion, quoted in Currency News, put it bluntly, "Residents are paying for salaries, not services. This extractive approach to municipal finance has left the city scrambling to plug holes, often through what critics call rent-seeking behavior, aggressively monetizing public assets without due process or respect for community ownership." Similar tactics have already imperiled institutions like the 138-year-old Rand Club, whose valuation was tripled in just 2 years, dramatically increasing its rate bills and threatening its survival. In this context, the city's interest in redeveloping parks looks less like renewal and more like opportunistic asset stripping.
The full piece is available on BizNews Premium. And that's it for today's show. We'll return tomorrow with more context on both global and local events. A big thanks to the BizNews production team. From me, Stuart Lohman. Until then.